Did you catch the newspaper article on Monday under the headline, "Perfumes Bring Painting's Garden of Delights to Life"? When it was painted in 1617, The Sense of Smell by Jan Brueghel the Elder and Peter Paul Rubens portrayed a royal garden in all its spring colours and details. Now the Prado Museum in Madrid is evoking its smells as well as its looks. The exhibition has recreated 10 fragrances identified with the artwork. Alejandro Vergaro, the curator, said, "It is a way of approaching the past through the sense of smell." The exhibition invites visitors to choose each of the 10 fragrances via touch screens equipped with diffusers. Whatever next. But you know how it is with smells. They bring back memories. They take you back to places. Places you're happy to revisit. Places maybe you don't wish to go. The smell of a particular perfume mingled with cigarette smoke, igniting the memory of an old love, lost but not forgotten. The haunting recollections of childhood, as you catch the scent of school corridors and cleaning fluid, or carbolic soap, or school canteen food, and you're back there, where memories were fond or difficult. The distinctive smell of the dentist's surgery, and all the memories it evokes. No one has to say anything. No one has said anything, but the smell transports you through time, and you're there again. Back there again. For Peter, the distinctive smell of a charcoal fire was unmistakable, and it was unmistakably the smell of failure. It took him right back there, to that terrible moment, that terrible thing. Did the charcoal smouldering fire in the beach do it for Peter? Most certainly. Take him back to that other fire for sure. Remember it, Peter? Will you ever forget it? Huddled in the courtyard, keeping his head down, keeping his nose clean, while his master and his friend is framed, sold out, and led off to be crucified. And he does nothing, says nothing. Actually, worse than that. The sheer terror that he might be exposed as a follower of Jesus, his up north accent giving him away, brings from Peter denials of increasing vehemence, cursing, swearing, foul-mouthed anger, anxiety mingled, betrayal heaped on betrayal, fear making a coward of the so-called friend. And the charcoal fire around which they huddled punctuated his failures as it hissed and spat. So did it all come back to him there on the beach with the risen Lord before him like a rebuke and the smell of this other charcoal fire bringing it all back? Another charcoal fire, this time bearing witness to what? Peter's amazing resurrection from washout failure to committed follower? His astonishing resurrection from faithless Judas to Peter the Rock? How was that possible? What could make that happen? How was such a transformation to be brought about? Had he developed a clearer understanding of things? Was it because he'd had time to mull stuff over and reach a different conclusion? Would fresh insights into the true meaning of the message and life of Jesus of Nazareth have been enough to upturn and overturn Peter's life to such a radical degree? Something cataclysmic must have occurred to save him out of his self-loathing and bitter-tasting treachery. I never knew the man who was his friend, his lord, his master. I never knew him. Okay, leave me alone. How many times do I have to tell you? He was nothing to me. He is nothing to me. And the charcoal fire hissed and spat. So, there on the beach, beside another fire, another moment in the history of Peter, what is to become of him? What will save him from his self-disgust and unforgivable betrayal, the recollection of which rose up to rebuke him as the smell of that second charcoal fire hung in the air? Only one thing could salvage Peter from the shipwreck of his denial. Only one person could give him back hope and possibility and courage and a job to do, a renewed responsibility that he had so signally failed in before, back then rubbing his hands in the cold as he stood head bowed, low profile in the courtyard by the fire when the question started and rained down on him like hailstones. The faded actor, whose career is on the slide, gets a plum television role in a new comedy series, and his career is resurrected. His almost forgotten face becomes an icon of comedy, and he gets asked to open supermarkets. The artist is all dried up. Inspiration is dead. She can't paint. She's useless. She'll never paint again. It's over. Then from somewhere, thank God, the spark reignites, an experience, a friendship, a loosening up somewhere along the road, a vision of staggering beauty that reawakens the dead cells of creativity, and her talent is resurrected. The scientist finds his researches have led him to a dead end. He thought he was heading towards the theory that would fit the data he had accumulated, but instead he hits a brick wall. The whole thought process comes to a crashing, embarrassing failure, a cul-de-sac of despair. Then he picks up the pieces of his dream theorem and looks at them again, and something stirs in him, the ghost of an idea, the whisper of a possibility, and suddenly the old excitement is back, a new purpose rises in him. The enthusiasm that had died, suffocated by failure and frustration, comes alive again with new hope. The couple whose love has grown cold, who find themselves merely going through the motions, maintaining the myth of their now dead love, the dry bones of what was once spontaneous and passionate. They talk things over with a friend. They recognise that a past once precious cannot, must not be written off. And tentatively, nervously, love is reborn. And what was dead formality is infused with laughter and tenderness, and something beautiful rises from the ashes. There are many resurrections. Even when an individual's life has been shattered by some terrible heart-stopping, soul-numbing crisis, and their capacity to smile is ripped from their soul, life is wrecked and ravaged and incapable, it would seem, of ever stopping hurting, new beginnings do come. And every relationship is once more infused with new worth and meaning, and wounded and limping, they emerge from the darkness into the sunlight. That is a kind of resurrection. It happens, and we're amazed and we're glad that it happens. But the event we call the resurrection, that is something altogether different. It speaks with a cosmic answer to a profound and global need. We know the grim scenario of broken dreams and lost direction that was Good Friday, and the followers of Jesus struggle to stay afloat as grief and despair drag them down, and dreadful words like betrayal, desertion, denial hang in the air like a terrible rebuke. With their own eyes, they had watched the triumph of brutality, raw power, wickedness, as love is swept aside and truth is trampled in the dust. This was the message of Friday. Listen, the bad guys win. And the good guy is made to look like a pathetic loser. Into this death comes a resurrection. The resurrection. As the power of God speaks, the true verdict declares the last word on the matter of the life and death of Jesus of Nazareth. God repudiates the notion that death, evil and cruelty are the ultimate arbiters of our human condition, that these ugly things have any final say in how things are or how things are to be. The cackling laughter of the forces of evil are silenced by one thing, the resurrection of Jesus. What begins as a whisper and then rises in crescendo to become a great shout that reverberates through time and eternity and into all the sad hearts of those who have lost faith, faith in the future, faith in themselves, comes this message, this miracle. Why seek the living among the dead? He is not here. He has been raised. There are many kinds of resurrection, but there is only one resurrection that brings us the promise of life and glorious joy. the assurance that no power on earth can deaden or destroy the love of God. Get the message. No power on earth can deaden or destroy the love of God. No savage disruption. No failure of nerve. Peter's nerve or your nerve or my nerve. No wickedness. No deed of appalling foulness can dent, diminish or defeat the love of God. That is what the risen Lord brings, who silences our deepest fears and embraces us with his miracle, including Peter. For only the one he had failed so signally could put it right for him. Only the risen Lord, in the power of his love, could fix it for him. That's what he does, the risen Lord, in the power of his love. Fixes people. This is the gospel. He fixes people. He forgives the unforgiven. He rebuilds the crushed and the broken. He lifts up the fallen in the power of his risen, unconquerable love and gives them the forgiveness they need and summons them to a calling that will challenge and fulfill them. Whoever we are, whatever we've done or failed to do, the living Lord Jesus reaches into our heart and says, as he says to us today, come. Come and eat. Come and eat.